Good morning, everyone. My name is Brian Barris, and I'm a research scientist with Agriculture and Agri-Food Canada out of the Lethbridge Research Centre in Alberta, Canada. So around 2005, a group of cereal researchers in basically at Lethbridge asked why triticale. And the idea there was positioning triticale perhaps and resurrecting it as a cereal platform technology. And so to answer that question, we basically asked the opposite, why not triticale? And really there were five major issues around developing triticale. Most of them centered on variety. So for example, they matured too late and that caused problems for our short season climate up in Canada. There were ergot issues historically with fall rye, spring rye, and triticale, and that would pollute the farmer's land and they wanted no part of that. Fusarium head blight is a major disease in the prairies of Canada, and how did triticale respond to that? And really no improvements to yield in triticale over the last decade. In relation to the bioindustry, the perception was that it would have poor starch, high viscosity, high pentazans, and that would create problems in an ethanol plant. So was born the Canadian Triticale Biorefinery Initiative, which ran quite a very large multidisciplinary program from 2008 to 2012. And for us agronomists, some of the objectives that we looked at during that time period was a biosafety assessment. So that was in the case of studying outcrossing potentials of triticale in the case that GM traits were introduced. I collaborated with breeders in Canada and with CIMMYT, and we developed and introduced both a low ergot variety as well as a fusarium tolerant variety. But the real center point was benchmarking triticale to wheat for applications such as ethanol, and then trying to figure out how best to integrate this cereal into a cropping system. So as far as benchmarking goes, the only data we had at that time was probably best summarized in a report by Dr. Ray Bergstra, and I won't summarize all the points, but suffice to say that he was pretty positive on triticale and pushed back on some of the negative perceptions. Perhaps he was somewhat bold by saying that it was equivalent ethanol plant operating margins to corn. I say that because the assumptions were based solely on starch data. So it really underscored the need to set about a study that we conducted across Canada, which we reported last year in Agronomy Journal in a two-part series, one describing the agronomic performance of triticale varieties compared to wheat across Canada, as well as ethanol. And some of our findings, we concluded actually that triticale would be superior to Canada Prairie Spring. Canada Prairie Spring is a red wheat up in Canada that would be similar to your dark northern spring in the United States, and that it would also be equivalent to a soft white spring wheat. So it was definitely more positive than we even thought, to be honest. And that immediately ethanol plants could increase efficiency by replacing CPS with triticale. So the next phase then was to start looking at a cropping system. And the main question for me was, should our goal in a cropping system with triticale be isolation in the case of diseases like ergot, or in the case of where we had a GM trait that we wanted to isolate, or should it be full integration? So we developed two fairly obvious hypotheses from that, assuming that rotational diversity would improve triticale performance and that rotational diversity would also improve proxies used to measure and make assumptions about soil health. So six rotational studies that we developed that I'll be talking about today included ranges from a very low diverse system to a fairly high diverse system. Our low diverse systems, starting with number one there, included continuous triticale, grown as sort of our benchmark, and the next low diversity rotation was it was still continuous cereals, but it was triticale alternating with soft white spring wheat. And the labels you see beside those rotations are the ones you'll see in the subsequent slides. So then we moved to moderate diverse rotations where we alternated triticale with either peas or with canola. And then we move to a high diverse rotation here on number five, where we have all three of those phases, field pea, canola, and triticale. And we also took it a step further and introduced an intercrop where we blended field peas with triticale and had that phase split, actually looking at a field pea and a forage pea, and then alternated that, followed with a phase of just monoculture triticale. And this is what it looked like at one of the sites. Fairly big plots. The seeding rates, I would say, would be moderate to high. For the intercrop, we backed off on that seeding rate, going to 60% of the rates stated above. And so this was, as well, a fully phased rotational study, including 13 crop phases. We had an additional rotation of continuous intercrop that we won't talk about today. And this was all conducted in a no-till environment, as you can see with that lower right picture, which is essentially the center wing out of a commercial air drill Conservapac, which was recently bought out by John Deere. And if you're not all that familiar with Canada, here's an additional map. You're definitely getting a geography lesson today in Canada. So all the little sites you see there were the sites where we had the ethanol plant, ethanol study across Canada. The ones in circles there are the sites that we had this rotational study. Three across the prairies, two at Lethbridge, an irrigated and a dryland, Swift Current, Saskatchewan, Kenora, Saskatchewan, and then we also had two sites in Quebec. Today we're going to focus strictly on the prairie sites, and the ANOVA results of those 23 site years indicated that we did indeed, with our rotational sequences, affect many of the yield and quality parameters for triticale, including yield, and that the most productive of our rotationals sequences was the high diverse rotational of canola, triticale, and peas. But it was followed fairly closely behind by just a two-year rotation of triticale and canola. The one thing that bothered me a bit by the yield data when we averaged across all the sites was that we had fairly low average yields. Triticale should be up around 5 tons per hectare, but as you can see, we were waffling around between 3 and 4 on this. So the question was, you know, was a different pattern occurring in a low production environment versus a higher production environment? So we conducted a sensitivity analysis, which allowed us to categorize our data into two zones, a high production zone versus a low production zone. But essentially, the results are the same, where we had high diverse rotation of the three phases, as well as triticale and canola, the two-year rotation being quite productive, and continuous triticale being towards the bottom. The last method of investigating and understanding our yield data was by setting a proxy for system stability. And quite simply, what we do is we just impose the coefficient of variation along the x-axis for that treatment, and ran our grain yield up against the y-axis. And so that vertical bar that you see there is the mean coefficient of variation for all the treatments, and the horizontal bar is our mean yield. And so where you want to be, obviously, is up as high as you can on the y-axis, and as far over to the left, which would be an indication of a very stable system. And once again, kind of out on its own was the high diverse rotation of canola, triticale, and peas. And doing not so well was the continuous triticale, but also the triticale peas wasn't the most productive system either. And similar results for biomass, and just more consistent in terms of the lower performers. This case, both continuous cereals and continuous triticale. So Dr. Newton Lupoy looked at the responses occurring in the triticale rhizosphere in relation to these rotational setups, and what he found was that it took a long time to even detect a response. So for example, we initiated this in 2008. He didn't detect a response at Swift Current until 2012, and as you can see from the four most productive bars there in terms of soil microbial activity, three of them required the P phase in it. The other proxy that he looked at was beta-glucosidase enzyme activity, and the highest enzyme activity observed, the top three were those rotations, again, that involved a P phase. And so the importance of peas in the rotation in the prairies wasn't exactly notable in our yield data, but certainly in our soil data, quite important. And so the question was, if we didn't detect this early on, was something changing over time to influence the peas above ground? And the reality is there wasn't. All there was is the differences with grain yield and triticale of these different rotations was that it was just starting to spread out over time, with the high diverse being the most productive in the blue here, and the peas sort of starting to catch up to canola here, canola being green, triticale canola, and pea triticale being the black. And the other three low diverse and intercrop ones starting to separate towards the bottom. So I would be remiss if I didn't spend a few seconds here talking about the canola phase, because the reality is in the Canadian prairies, our rotations are canola-based, not cereal-based. And so I was interested to see how canola responded to diversity, and the reality is it really didn't. And that would explain why producers are getting away with very, very tight rotations. And in fact, the picture on the left is the two-year rotation of canola, which actually looked better and most farmers picked in our field days compared to the three-year rotation on the right. So we didn't enjoy any benefits to yield going to a three-year system and including peas from the perspective of canola. But again, if you look at the soil data, we weren't doing much to improve our soil health by not having that pea phase, and that's going to be lost on producers without data like this. So to include, diversity was important for triticale, but in situations, isolation may be desired, and if so, there should be an expectation that we're going to suffer approximately a 17% reduction in productivity. Peas obviously are important for soil health, but the above ground benefits not always as notable. And of interest and underscored in other talks, I'm sure, was the importance of studying these effects long term, which we rarely do. We make broad assumptions based on 2 and 3 year studies quite often, and the reality is the importance of running long term was really underscored with the soil data. So I will conclude with this slide by thanking my co-authors and acknowledging my funding partners. So thank you very much.
Yeah, we're going to wrap it up, unfortunately.